What's going on, everybody? Happy Monday. How are we doing, everybody?
I know, everybody in New England's miserable. 8-game losing streak for these Revs as they lose to the Columbus Crew on Saturday night by a final tick of 2-1. 2-1 for our American-speaking audience listening right now. We'll have Seth Maycomber on the show today from the Bent Musket and Total-MLS.com. Both websites, which you can follow on Twitter. We'll give you more information on that later. Horse Guy is about the only thing that makes me enjoy going down to Gillette right now. And we'll talk about Horse Guy, too, with Seth today.
Oh, why does it have to be so bad?
I don't get it with the way things have transpired over these last couple of weeks. And granted, I understand that this is a part of what the Revs did not do during the off season, and we're starting to see that become more of a factor now in why the Revs are not successful. You didn't go out there and you didn't get a proven striker, whether it be a designated player or a true veteran. I don't think you needed to get a true designated player if you're the Revs. But to have somebody proven up top is critical, especially if you're trying to mold a guy like Pat Mullins, who I believe is starting to get hurt by the lack of effectiveness that he's having in games right now. And I'm not saying that you're not getting a developing hold-up play. You're not having him do the little things forwards are supposed to do outside of scoring goals. But he's not getting the same types of runs you would expect a rookie to get. He's getting more of a responsible role and is asked to do more. And I think that is what's really hurting this Revs team right now. And it's going to take a big signing now for this team to not only get themselves back into a playoff position, but get themselves back into a respectable playoff position, because this was a team that we went into the season and a lot of people predicted they would repeat what they did last year. Yes, they finished third place on the last day of the year, but third place is third place no matter which way you slice it, okay? It tastes the same. It looks the same. And a lot of people looked at this Revs team and said, they're young. They didn't put the money into it, but they have something here that separates them from everybody else, and that is the experience of youth. And that is what Jay's done well with and working with. You saw it earlier in the season, how Diego, Teal, Pat moving up the field like it's a train. Now you can't even get the space up down the sidelines to get Teal the ball. Teal looked better the other night. I'll give him credit. He's starting to pull it together. I don't think Teal is there yet. Adrian Peterson really messed up things for guys with ACL injuries. Teal Bunbury, coming off the ACL injury that he did, I don't know the extent of it. I don't know the type of rehab he went through. I'd love to talk to him about it one day, though. Just the coming back of repaired ACL surgery. Because you take an athlete like Teal Bunbury, right? And then you look on the NFL side of things and you see a guy like Adrian Peterson who has an ACL injury and, oh, he's having the greatest career of his life. So the idea of, and I think this translates for all professional sports, because I think the Bulls hurt themselves. Well, the Bulls lost Rose to Achilles more so, not ACL. But I would say that Adrian Peterson's return to his professional sport and doing the things that he did after reconstructive ACL surgery hurts guys that go on to ACL surgeries, and franchises look at them after they give them these surgeries in which they are supposed to recover in miraculous times. And not only are you supposed to recover in a miraculous time, you're supposed to go out there and perform. And I think that Teal Bunbury didn't have to perform coming off of ACL surgery with Sporting Kansas City because, you know, he was playing behind forwards and had to fill different positions and wasn't used as much. So coming to New England now, he's fulfilling a much larger role. And because he did not get the run that you would have liked to have seen him have, he didn't. And that's just because he was playing in a very competitive and a very good Sporting Kansas City system. So he couldn't really separate himself from anybody else, I don't believe, which is why Kansas City was so willing to send him over here to New England. And now if you could go back in that time machine, man, I would think that a lot of Revs fans would want Benny Failhaber back right now. And they would trade away Teal Bunbury back to Sporting Kansas City if that was possible. Because you think about what Benny could do for this Revs team. And we'll talk more trade situations in a couple minutes here with Seth Maycomber. And obviously I'm not suggesting that the Revs go out there and trade Teal Bunbury right now. But I just feel like that if you had to go back in the time machine and you had to pick between which guy you would have really have liked to have on your roster, I think the obvious answer would be Benny. And that's nothing against Teal Bunbury. Again, I think this guy is still dealing with some lingering ACL issues that, hey, you always have in the back of your mind whether your ACL is feeling 100% that day or if you're feeling 95% that day. You always have the thought in the back of your mind, can I re-tear this thing on a turn of a ball? Because Teal Bunbury is so good at those step-overs, plants the wrong way, he could re-tear that thing. So I don't think he's been able to get back the same type of runs. And also, too, in looking at the skeleton of this team, another part that's just lacking right now, Diego, he hasn't done anything. And we're waiting. It just feels like watching him play, it's so frustrating because the kid, because he's still a kid, he's 19 years old, and I'm not going to kill him as much, but he's just been so dull. And granted, he had some moves the other night that I thought, hey, the Revs are going to score here. Diego's moving down the sidelines, inside the box. Diego on his left foot and puts it right into the keeper, Clark. No problem. No problem the other night, I thought, for the goalkeeping of Steve Clark and Columbus. They did not challenge him. How do you not challenge Columbus the other night with the space that you're getting inside the area? I mean, I think the biggest letdown of an opportunity had to have been Diego right in front of Steve Clark when he just puts a dribbler right into the keeper. He could have blasted that right by Steve Clark on his left foot. Right into the keeper's hands. So that's a problem. So, and looking at the core of this team, through the three guys up top are really ineffective right now. And in the midfield, Jay, finally, he puts Kellen in the middle. I feel like we've been waiting to say that all year. And granted, as the game went on and Diego came in, Kellen is forced to the outside, and I think you saw the game slow down a lot when Kellen was put on the outside. But when he's in the middle of the field, man, this is a different team. I think it's becoming obvious now. That kid needs to be in the middle. And it makes you beckon the questioning of the decisions of Jay Heaps lately. Because when you have the performances you do, the Revs looked great for 40 minutes against Columbus. It was a back-and-forth game, granted, and there was no real gain of possession in the game. But I thought when Kellen was in there, in the middle, him and Lee, this is the best that this team has looked over this 8-game losing streak. Why haven't you put him in there earlier? I think teams would much rather not see Kellen Rowe in the lineup than see him sitting in the middle right there. I just don't think this team is as effective when you put him on the outside. He's not that quick, yo. He's really not. And I'm not trying to take shots at Kellen here, man. But when I'm thinking Kellen Rowe, I'm not thinking as a winger. I'm not thinking a flank guy. I'm thinking two flank guys on this team right now. There's really only two. It's Teal Bunbury and Diego Fagundes. Yes, you got Steve Newman in there, but they're not giving Newman a run because he's a rookie, which is kind of oxymoronic because you're doing a lot with Patrick Mullins right now. If your wing guys are doing nothing, then why isn't a guy like Steve Newman getting a start? And then, two, I think, coming up on Wednesday night here, you shouldn't sit Scott Caldwell. I don't think you should sit Scott Caldwell. I think that'd be very foolish, and here's why. Scott Caldwell's not been the issue for this Revs team. He's done well off the bench, yes. He's a closer and keeps games with New England. But here's why I like Scott. And I think a lot of it has to do with what he does and the similarities, the small similarities, small similarities between him and Dorman's game. They both play very aggressive. I'm pretty sure Scotty picked up a yellow card the other night. And they both are not afraid to play on both sides of the field. And I think if you wanted to push Scotty up higher, you could. You could. And that's why I think you cannot drop Scott Caldwell from this starting 11 right now. Because not only is he a good holding defensive midfielder, but if the Revs are able to gain the momentum and the tempo of a game ever, then the guy that's going to be able to push the ball up the field is Scott Caldwell. He can play much higher. He can fill the spaces for you offensively and defensively. I think the problem is when you have these situations, you have him and Lee trying to do too much sometimes. So you have to find an even balance of which guy is going to be playing up top and which guy is going to be holding. More so than not, I think Scott should be holding because even though he doesn't have the lack of height or size, I still think that he is a body that you cannot take out of this lineup because of his skill and his IQ. That is what separates, in my opinion, Scott Caldwell from a lot of other people right now. And it's going to do a lot for New England if he can get on the score sheet, too. Because if he can open up games, if you got Scott Caldwell opening up games for you, and I'm not talking off of dead ball opportunities, which is the only goal the Revs have scored, I think, in their last three games in which they have scored. They've only had dead ball opportunities as goals lately. I think the last run of play goal came against Philadelphia. It did. So if Scott could get involved in the run of play, that's huge. Even more so than just winning. Because you just want to see what guys are going to be effective to carry you through next season. Because I don't think it's a good sign if you don't have anybody that can propel you to 2015. If this thing really goes to the crapper and, you know, the Revs lose almost every single game for the rest of the season, this thing's going to get blown up. I think Jay's going to, the hot seat talks with Jay will start around September. And you're not going to see anybody that you saw from this year's team to next year's team. But you have to have a lot of bad things fall that way. Maybe the Revs pull themselves out of this. I don't think the mental toughness has been defined yet of this team because we've seen how good they are during the 5-game win streak and we've seen how bad they are during this 8-game lull. If it continues, then we're going to know that this was all a facade in the beginning of the season. But if they can change it against Colorado this Wednesday night, then you put yourself, I think, in a very good position to take 3 points away from New York. And if you can take 6 points still here, before the 2-week break, when you got to play Portland on the 16th here at home, if you can take 6 points before this 2-week break, I still think this Revs team should be in the conversation to be in the playoffs and to compete for maybe 3 or 4. And maybe you shouldn't even be worried about seedings right now. Maybe all you should be worried about is getting in. All right, let's jump to the hotline right now. Joining us on the show, as I said, at the top of the program, Seth Maycomer from TotalMLS.com, Total-MLS.com, joins us on the program now. Also, one of the many fine faces of the Bent Musket. Seth, what's going on, brother?
I'm doing well. I mean, it's hard to kind of swallow this 8-game losing streak, but me personally, I'm doing okay. I'm on vacation, got the day off, so I'm doing okay.
Yeah, you're not molding young minds, and at least you don't have to go into another stressful situation when you left Gillette the other night. What do you think about the 2-1 loss to the Columbus Crew?
It's tough, and I think one of the biggest reasons why it's so tough is because the Revs actually lined up pretty well against the Columbus Crew. They were the type of team that, you know, move those outside backs forward, which gives a lot of space for a guy like Diego Fagundes and Teal Bunbury. I think it's, you know, it speaks volumes for the fact that we were talking about how good Diego Fagundes was doing on Saturday night. He wasn't scoring, his shooting wasn't great, but his movement and his defense and his ability to get behind the other team and to make things happen, we haven't seen that in a very long time for Diego. So I thought the Revs actually lined up very well against Columbus, and this was the type of game that maybe you get the 3 points at home because Columbus themselves haven't exactly had a good season. So it's a little frustrating because that to me was a winnable game. The Revs' strategy of getting behind the defense worked well given the Columbus' strategy of moving those outside backs forward. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, things don't go their way. They concede that early goal again, and they're now on an 8-game losing streak.
And during that 8-game losing streak that we're on here, Seth, would you say when you take out the three West Coast, because you said this was a winnable game for the Revs the other night when you just gave the situation you did just there. When you look at the way things have fallen for New England, take out the Real Salt Lake, Dallas, and the Galaxy game. Would you say that the five East Coast games that this team had during this 8-game losing streak were all winnable games?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you talk about MLS in general, I think most games are winnable games. It's very hard in this league to go on a winning streak because things are up and down, injuries happen, variety of stuff can happen that any given team can win on any given day. The problem, of course, is that the Revs are conceding these early goals. You look back at the game against the Chicago Fire, that 1-0 game. I mean, if you don't concede that goal in the, I think it was the first third, there was a third minute against Quincy Amariquois. If you don't concede that, then you all of a sudden have a game that opens up and the Revs grab a goal and maybe you grab a win. Talking to Bobby Shuttleworth after the game, they look back at this and say, seven games, eight games, yeah, we lost them all, but there are some games that we probably deserved a point or probably deserved 3 points, depending on how you look at it. So certainly there were some games that the Revs could win. Unfortunately, and head coach Jay Heaps is absolutely the type of guy, they didn't win them, so you have to move forward and you have to keep working hard and you have to get out of this rut because, as I put out an article today, we're talking about the post-shutout era, which means anything from 2000 to later. The Revs have lost 8 straight games. The record is 10. Real Salt Lake, which is their first year in 2005, they lost 10 straight. So we're talking about the Revs potentially, if they drop points, if they get no points, no ties, no wins on Wednesday and on Saturday, then they could actually tie the record for most consecutive losses in MLS. And the only weird thing, I want to bring this up, the only odd thing about that, as I'm doing my research about that, is that the New England Revolution actually started the losing streak for Real Salt Lake in 2005, so a little bit of irony there.
A lot of irony right there, and we're talking with Seth Maycomber today. You mentioned Jay Heaps. Is it time to put him on the hot seat? Yes. This team made the playoffs last year. Yes, this team has, I believe, improved in the two seasons that Jay has had these guys. If you look strictly at what he did in 2012 to 2013, you have to give him credit for building up a franchise that doesn't have the marquee names like Toronto or Seattle, etc. So now in this 8-game losing streak, he had a 5-game winning streak earlier in the season. You went 5-8 like it was nothing overnight. So my question is Jay on the hot seat? Does he deserve to be on the hot seat? Or is this the guy that's just being pointed out as the scapegoat?
I think it's an interesting question to raise, and I think a lot of people, including myself, are looking at last year and looking at DC United and the run that they went through and some of the things that Ben Olsen said and some of the things that Ben Olsen did to keep his job. I mean, that was a really dreadful season for DC United, and he was asked that question, Ben Olsen was asked that question of, should you be on the hot seat? And he said, of course I should be. Everyone should be on the hot seat if you go through this type of run. No one's asked Jay Heaps that kind of question, but he's the same type of fiery competitor that I imagine he would say something very similar. Again, no one's asked that question. I can't say that for sure, but he's so fiery and he's such a win-at-all-cost type of guy. He wants to win so badly. He loves this team that I imagine he's probably thinking that in his head a little bit as they go through this run. At the same time, I mean, you look at the standings and you look at a team like the Red Bulls. The Red Bulls also only have 5 wins. The Reds actually have more wins, but the Red Bulls have more ties. So it's interesting how you get the wins can distort and mess things up and make you think in different ways. The Red Bulls are ahead of the Revs in the standings, but with 5 wins, they're not really having a spectacular season, okay? And not a lot of people are talking about Mike Pecky out. So just because the Revs are on this 8-game losing streak doesn't mean that they don't have the ability to turn it around. They don't have the ability to do well. I think the team took a big leap when they put Jay Heaps as the coach of the Revolution. Obviously, he had no experience heading into the job. So I think that gives him a little bit more of a leash as far as what he can do, what he can accomplish. Last year, we saw great accomplishments from him. He did very, very well, bringing the team to a playoff, almost advancing the playoffs against Sporting KC, who eventually became the champions. So again, I think that gives him a little bit more leeway as well. I think what will be interesting to see is, does this losing streak continue? Do we end up seeing some moves happening in the transfer window to help boost this team, to help make this team a little bit stronger? And I think that's going to depend on what happens with Jay Heaps. I don't know if I see Jay Heaps being let go before the season ends.
I agree with you that he probably won't get let go before the season ends. But here's the biggest difference between Mike Petke and Jay Heaps. And it has nothing to do, in my opinion, with their coaching styles. It has to do with the teams that they manage. And granted, I've always been on the side. Don't worry about the designated player. Don't worry about the designated player. But if you're going to point out Petke versus Heaps, you have to point out the fact that Petke has a better lineup to work with and more recognizable names and I think more consistent players right now than what Jay's got. I mean, Jay's guys have completely fallen ice cold over this 8-game losing streak. And, I see why you would want to put Petke on a hot seat, especially in a sports-driven market like New York is. I just feel like, you know, Heaps will be more on the hot seat for not tampering with his lineup, while they'll give Petke a break because while he might not tamper with his lineup, he's got the personnel of guys to get it done. Does that sound on track enough for you?
No, I think I agree with a lot that's being said there. Jay Heaps hasn't really tinkered that much, which is interesting because last year he tinkered quite a bit. I don't have this down in front of me, but he went somewhere around 13, 14 games using different lineups in the beginning of the season. Like every single lineup had at least one change to it. There's like 14, something like that, different lineups that were completely unique. So last year he was a really big tinkerer. This year he's kind of found his guys and he stuck with them. So besides that change we saw with that 4-4-2, it didn't really work out as well as they kind of hoped. We haven't really seen much tinkering, so that could be something that ends up putting Jay Heaps on the hot spot. But again, I think he gets a little bit of leeway because he was a new coach, because maybe we see some moves in the transfer market. I mean, you look at the Houston Dynamo, they've been terrible so far this year, but they've made two really big acquisitions.
DeMarcus Beasley's huge. And
midfielder from Honduras.
Do you think the Revs will go out and make a designated player signing? Do you think this team is done for the season? Or because you had Jerry Bengtsson coming in 2012. Last year you had Juan Agudelo. Who do the Revs go out and get this year that's a name that'll spark up this roster?
That's the question, right? And you would love me to try to break news and to tell people.
I would love you to do that, Seth, on this show. I would love you to do it. Yes, do it. Do it, Seth. Come on, give me something here, buddy. Come on.
I know, right? Unfortunately, I have no inside information. I'm kind of waiting to see what kind of happens. Something's going to happen. I really have very little doubt that something's going to happen, because if you look at the roster, 26 is not going to be enough. Remember, 26. We have 26 roster spots right now, and four of those are goalkeepers. Okay, and you can only play one at a time as far as that goes. So you got to imagine that there has to be some sort of move that's going to happen in the upcoming 9 days. There's only 9 days left in the transfer window here. So moves are going to happen pretty quickly. I listened to your interview with Brian Bolello after the game this past weekend. I mean, he talked about designated players, that there are offers out there. I'm following Brian on Twitter. He's talking about the team's targeting between 5 and 10 players, that, yes, some of those are, in fact, designated players. But he talked about, and Mike Burns and all these people have talked about, Jay Heaps says, we just want to strengthen this team. Okay, doesn't matter if it's a huge name that's going to put people in the stands, or if it's just a guy that's like going to be a solid contributor that's going to get things done. That's the type of player that they're looking for. So something's going to happen. Now the question is it going to be a Juan Agudelo, who has done absolutely amazing last year and was a huge part of this team's success, or is it a guy like Charlie Davies? Because remember, Charlie Davies came in late last year and he really hasn't made an impact. So the question is, are we going to make a guy as a starter on day one, or is it going to be a guy that needs some time to adjust and come into the team and maybe or maybe not be a contributor? So we'll see what's going to happen.
Well, what do you think? Do you think you would imagine that amongst this 8-game losing streak right now. You need somebody to move the dial and turn it quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And the team has talked about that we need to turn this around as quickly as possible, right the ship. I imagine that we're going to see a good player come in, because Brian Bilodeau has mentioned that he does not see it being a trialist that's going to be signed. He sees this being a guy that they've watched before, they've seen before, but has not come in on trial. So therefore, that kind of implies that this is a well-known player. He's also mentioned that the players that are being looked at, a lot of them have contracts with other teams. So they're not coming on free transfer, which is why the negotiation process has taken a little bit longer. So you imagine that this is a guy that's going to be able to come in and start on day one. But the problem is, we all know this, that MLS is a league that takes time to getting used to because of the physicality, the travel, this and that. I mean, Jerry Benson, I'll go back and say it every single time, that's a great move for the Revolution. Has it panned out? No, absolutely not. And you look at guys in the past like Lekic, or you look at a guy like Milton, who signs a designated player. I mean, these guys haven't, you know, they scored some goals. They've gone on from the Revolution and had success elsewhere, but they really didn't work within Gillette Stadium. So I imagine that we're going to get a big player, that we're going to get a contributor. But the question is, how much can you work within MLS and how much can you work within the Revolution system?
Seth Maycomber with us today. And, you know, you mentioned goalkeepers before. Four of them occupy this roster. Obviously, Jackson, Softner, Shuttleworth, Knighton. You and I were talking earlier off air about some possibilities about goalkeepers that could come in here to New England. And we'll get back to the designated player talk in just a couple of minutes. But I don't want to forget this train of thought with goalkeepers right now, because we talk about moving players, moving out players. Do you think the Revs could possibly move out a goalkeeper, some allocation money, or maybe a field player to try and go out and get a goalkeeper that's having either a mediocre season or is in a battle like Bobby and Brad are right now?
Yeah, I mean, it could happen. It's a need for the team going forward, I would think, because neither Bobby or Brad have fully taken over the spot and made fans confident and shown that they are both starters in this league. I mean, they both had their shaky moments. They both had good moments too, but overall they've had the shaky moments. I don't know if it's the most pressing need, but there are guys out there you can look at. I put an article out for the Bent Musket last week, and I said maybe you look at a guy like Ryan Mira, who was a starter for the New York Red Bulls, but he's no longer a starter because he got injured, and, you know, Luis Robles has come in, and he's been absolutely outstanding. Joe Willis is another big name that's out there, who's stuck as a backup over in DC United. Jeff Antonella filled in very well for Nick Raimondo when he was away in the World Cup in Real Salt Lake. So those are very good players that you might be able to make a trade for. Obviously, the big news that's coming out is that it looks like the Philadelphia Union might be signing the Algerian goalkeeper, who is very, very good at the World Cup. If that happens, you're looking at a wealth of players, a wealth of goalkeepers over in Philadelphia. So you look at a guy like Zach McMath, who I think has become a very, very good goalkeeper now. He still has his moments. He's young. He still has some shaky, you know, tendencies. But we're talking about a goalkeeper who's made three PK stops, so he clearly has the ability. You know, he has some youth international experience as well. They also have Andre Blake, who a lot of people are high on. We're talking about the UConn guy. We know him well here. Absolutely outstanding player. Maybe they kind of get rid of him. The problem with a lot of those guys, though, is that they're still young. So, you know, Bobby Shuttleworth, Brad Knighton, and Softner and Jackson, these are all very, very young goalkeepers. Last year when the Revs made their successful, undefeated streak towards the end of the season, towards the playoffs, they relied on Matt Reese. And that guy was experienced. It's a guy who, you know, sometimes looks like he was wearing a Superman cape when he was making those saves. And you might want a more experienced goalkeeper out there to help organize that back line. So I think the goalkeeping thing is interesting. I think it's something that if someone calls Mike Burns, they're going to answer and they're going to listen. But I don't know if the team is necessarily hunting down a goalkeeper midseason. I think that might be something more when the offseason comes around.
I agree with that. I think during the offseason, especially if this team doesn't make the playoffs, which I think a lot of people are anticipating at this point for the way things have gone over this 8-game losing streak, this roster will be blown up. Seth Maycomber with us right now. And Seth, I think another thing too, and going back to bringing players in, we talk about a high-profile guy and a guy that can automatically come in and get it done right away. I think a guy that people are getting too excited about and probably going to be disappointed when he doesn't get signed, that's Juan Agudelo. And I just don't think that he's coming back here to New England. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think everyone wants him to. I think everyone, that'd be a great sign.
Be nice.
You know how good he is.
It would be nice.
We know he fits with the team. We know that he's fun with guys like Diego, and I think he'd be great with Teal and Wynn and all these types of players. The problem is, of course, is that Juan Agudelo wants to go to Europe. It's very clear that he wants to go to Europe. He's stated it over and over and over again. He's young. I think he's 21 years old. And if he wants to go over there, that's the type of thing that he's going to do. There was a quote that came out soon after he was, heading overseas, that he was done with the Revolution, that mentioned that the Reds didn't necessarily give him a great offer when they left. They gave him enough of an offer so that the Reds hold his rights. So if Juan Agudelo were to come back to the league, he either come to the Revolution or the Revolution would have to deal away his rights. Because obviously right now he's training with Orlando City, which is going to get Twitter a buzz about, is he going there next year or something like that. If he were to end up in Orlando City, the Reds would have to trade away his rights to Orlando City. So they would get something in return. I just don't see Juan Agudelo coming back. I think it might be worthwhile. I mean, you saw how good that team was, and you see how hard it is to find a striker in MLS. You know Agudelo is a very good striker. He's also a striker that gets injured a lot, but he would be worthwhile putting lots of money into, but I don't know if it's necessarily the move that the Revs are going to make right now.
Would you trade away Jose Gonçalves?
I think I would consider it. I think that he's been a struggling player on this team right now, and I think that he has MLS value. I don't know how much value he has on the international market because I don't know how many teams are watching MLS. Remember, we talked about this before, I believe, last time I was on the program. We talked about how, this is a guy who got in a fight when he was with Hearts about his pay, and he has a similar situation this year with the Revs. And I'm not saying that he was in the wrong or the team was in the wrong or anything like that, but when you have that type of news coming out, I don't necessarily know how many teams are fighting to find you, especially on the international market. And remember, Jose Gonçalves wasn't having exactly a lot of playing time when he was overseas, which is why he ended up being on loan with the New England Revolution.
Right. And that amazes me, too, that they would, people still think this guy could be a big impact player for a European club that for reasons that you've just mentioned.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he's young enough that maybe he, if he had a better year this year at MLS, certainly he might be able to make a jump back over there and play for a team. But I think right now, I mean, you listen to Ashley Cole's type of comment saying that, MLS is a joke, or like he would never come over to MLS or something like that. I mean, that perception still exists out there. So it's going to be hard for Jose Gonçalves to necessarily make the move overseas unless his agent is doing a really good job of hyping him up. When I look at moves around the league, maybe you look at Jose Gonçalves for Justin Knapp. Justin Knapp is absolutely outstanding for Montreal Impact right now. But let's be honest, Montreal Impact's defense has been very, very bad. They did not do well last night. Heath Pierce got turned around a little bit. Jose Gonçalves returns to his 2013 form, then, that might be a trade that the Montreal Impact would be interested in. You also look at maybe Sal Zizzo over in Sporting KC. He's been a very good player, but not always a starter for the team. You look at Benji Hoya for Chicago Fire. I've always been very high on him, but he's not getting a ton of minutes for the Chicago Fire. I believe he's on loan as well. So you have to deal with the issue of, can you buy him for next year? Or is this a short-term thing? But I think he'd work well with the Revolution's quick attacking ability. And maybe a guy like Michael over in FC Dallas, he's a guy who's great with a free kick, and we saw how deadly free kicks can be. The Reds get fouled a lot sometimes, especially with Chris Tierney, suffering an injury. We don't know how long he's going to be out or, if he's going to be out at all. But, when he goes down to the turf, you have to wonder how many games he might miss. Michael might be a guy that comes in, plays a little defense, and hits those free kicks and starts to punish teams for fouling the New England Revolution. So those are some of the options I think of maybe Jose Gonçalves might be worth within the league.
Seth Maycomber, he's great as always. And, this has been a terrible, terrible losing streak. I can't take it anymore, the way that things have gone for the Revolution. I mean, who's going to enjoy going to Gillette Wednesday night if this team goes out there and loses 9 straight. It is kids' night, though, so we do have that to look forward to, right, Seth? You know? Just a
absolutely, yeah. You have some fans in there for sure. But hopefully they get a win, and hopefully some of those guys come back afterwards.
So now we look at some other fun things, and I saw you put up the article of Horse Guy. Horse Guy is becoming a phenomenon around New England and around MLS, too. A fan of the weekend, you would say, right? It's a win for the Revs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I actually talked to him just because I want to have a fun piece. You know, he shows up on TV. He shows on MLSsoccer.com. You know, the Ben Muskets is on top of all of this revolution talk. We always want to be one of the first people to post things and to find things out. So, you know what? Why not interview Horse Guy himself? And he said he's happy to kind of be a distraction during this streak. And he was not expecting to appear and to be the talk of the town during this time.
So wait, which Twitter account is the Horse Guys? Because I see two. It's at the Real Horse Guy and at Not the Horse Guy. So which one should people be following? There's like two different Twitter accounts out there right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Like you mentioned, I mean, this whole thing's ridiculous. And the interview I did was pretty ridiculous. I encourage you to check out the article if you haven't.
Yeah, get on.
But I talked to the Real Horse Guy. So at Real Horse Guy is the real one. He quickly sent me a message when I posted Not Real Horse Guy as being the official Twitter account. He said, "That's an imposter. No way. That is not me." He has now since created his own Real Horse Guy Twitter account. So that's the one you should be following. He's a very humble human being. He does not want to be named. He does not want to be outed as his real identity because Horse Guy belongs to all of us. He's a piece of all of us here in New England. But
can
he
I name
he
him?
Will be showing up.
Can I name him? Can I give him a nickname? And if he likes it, he'll get back to you. If he's listening to this pod right now, I got like an idea for a nickname for this guy. Just for a T-shirt, if he wants to wear it around Gillette, so people at least can identify him. So you ready? Here we go. Paul the Centaur.
Paul the Centaur. All right, that sounds good. I'm gonna make sure that he listens to this.
You know,
and I will go to my secretive channels to actually correspond with the horse, because this is not, you know, it's very, very secretive how I have to talk to Horse Guy.
Oh yeah,
he does not want to be outed. So I'll try to get some information for you. We'll get back to you on that one. I like it though. I like it.
You know what I mean, man? I mean, for Paul Revere, we're in Boston, the Revolution. Come on, Paul the Centaur. Get it done, Seth. I'm relying on you now. Now you're my main man on this. Now if I can't get Paul the Centaur, then I know it's completely done for me. I know I can't like try to nickname anything ever again. So like you're my guiding light on this, brother.
I'm trying. I want to be the top correspondent on the Paul the Centaur beat. That's my big
yes.
beat now.
There we go. And he's even saying it. I love it. I appreciate that, Seth. Horse Guy. Listen, if it's going to be one thing to get us through the rest of this year, it will be looking forward to going to Gillette home games and seeing Paul the Centaur in the stadium. I mean, I can't. If Brad Feldman's not going to be able to ignore this thing anymore, it's going to grow to be huge. And he said he's a season ticket holder, too, so forget about it.
Yep, and he said he's going to be back. So
Love it.
Centaur.
Paul the Centaur, I'm calling you out, brother. Thank you, man. Hey, Seth, brother, as always, this is great stuff. You know, man, the Revs are going to pull themselves out of this 8-game losing streak eventually. It's just a matter of when, right? Right.
Absolutely.
All right, he's Seth Maycomer. Follow Seth on Twitter at SethMan31, at SethMan31. He's great as always, and appreciate him taking the time out today. And a shout-out to the people at the Bent Musket and Total-MLS.com for busting their rear ends as well as always. So, Seth, thanks, brother, and I'll see you Wednesday night at beautiful Gillette Stadium.
Sounds good. See you then.
All right. Thanks again to Seth Maycomer, and follow the Bent Musket on Twitter at the Bent Musket, Total MLS on Twitter at Total MLS, SethMan31, as I said before, for Seth Maycomer. Great show as always. That's a little cocky. That sounded so bad. It was a fun show today. It's a great time to have Seth on, as always, because you see that those guys do work hard and they do care, and The coverage is out there for you people that are like, well, you know, nobody cares about the Revs. Nobody wants to cover this team. You're not looking hard enough then. Because, you know, Seth, Steve, the two guys that I've gotten to know well from the Bent Musket are almost at almost every home game. Almost every home game. I won't say every. but they're there, they're covering a team, and they're trying to ask the hard questions right now. You got to keep in mind, too, this is an organization that likes to keep things tight-lipped, and so we always don't know the answers. But you would like to assume that they're working hard enough. I would believe that. And I know that we don't have a definite answer on what they're going to do at striker or in the signings department yet, but I got to believe something's going to happen soon. All right, so tomorrow on the pod, at Brian underscore speaks, joins me. You don't want to miss it, okay? Mark your calendar now. This guy is always, always a good time. We got him on Tuesdays now. So we'll be in studio. We'll talk about these Revs, preview Colorado on Wednesday night. And then, two, we'll have some more fun. Horse guy, Paul the Centaur, my dude. I'm telling you, I want a picture. Forget naming rights. I want a picture and naming rights now. Selfish. I am selfish. Paul the Centaur, I'm naming it. All right, we'll talk more about the Centaurs and the Revs tomorrow. Bye.